From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters. Here are a couple of numbers. Household income in Idaho went up about 18% from 2015 to 2020. Sounds encouraging, right? However, Idaho's housing values went up almost 75% in that same period of time. So that means affording a home has gotten harder, a lot harder. And a lot more people are putting more of their paycheck toward housing costs instead of things like food or healthcare. And according to a study from the Idaho Policy Institute, that means people are more likely to face evictions, job creation slows, and economic development can falter. The Idaho statewide housing analysis put some stark numbers on the state of housing on the state of the housing market across the Gem State. So joining us today to talk more about that report are Vanessa Fry, the director of the Idaho Policy Institute at Boise State University, and research associate Lance McGinnis Brown. I want to welcome both of you to the program.
Thanks, Gemma. It's great to be here.
Thank you.
So, Vanessa, you found that Idaho's population grew more than 17% since 2010. Can we start by talking about that number itself?
Definitely, Gemma. Yeah, I mean, I think we've all felt that that growth, those of us that have been in the state for that period of time. I think when we embarked upon this housing study, we were really curious to see, how much is that growth has really happened? And then finding out that it's just shy of 20% in a way wasn't surprising just because of the studies we've been doing at Idaho Policy Institute. But that does lead us to understand more about the housing burden that's being experienced across the state.
Right, because median income is up, and that's a good thing, right? However, as I said in the intro to this segment, Idaho's housing values, I mean, have skyrocketed, literally. I mean, we talk a lot about how housing prices have gone up, but Lance, you guys put a really big number on that, a 75% increase over 5 years. I mean, that's a lot. Is this something unique, though, to our state?
Thanks. I would say that across the country, a lot of areas are seeing growth. But Idaho was particularly unique in that it grew almost four times faster than the U.S. average in 2022, for example, especially in for example, Ada County has been one of the fastest growing counties in the U.S. for many years in a row. But a lot of that growth is coming into suburban areas, areas outside of urban cores, which can raise a lot of challenges in terms of infrastructure and adapting to that growth.
So, Vanessa, can we talk about household income? Because, you know, just the number that you presented in your study from 2015 to 2020 saying, you know, household income has gone up by 18%. I mean, that's a significant number. Yet when you weigh that against how much housing has gone up, I mean, can income in Idaho even keep pace with the cost of housing?
The quick answer to that is no. It certainly has not kept pace, right? And what we're seeing is the people that are earning more income, they're on the higher end of the income bracket. And when we look at those people that are housing burdened, although we're seeing housing burdened across income brackets, it's really those low income earners that are really feeling the huge pressure when it comes to those higher costs for housing.
Mm. So Lance, I know that there was a lot of data in this report. Can you talk to us about where it came from?
Yeah, a lot of the data, the vast majority of the data came from the U.S. Census Bureau. And they have an annual American Community Survey that attempts to collect estimates about a lot of different county-level demographics. And I should note that there is a little bit of a lag. Right now, the data is a couple years old. We're working on updating that as the new data comes in. And data from smaller counties might have a larger level of uncertainty simply due to the fact that it comes from a smaller number of people. However, from our other research that we've done, we're finding that the findings from the American Community Survey largely mirror what we're seeing from other sources.
And Lance, the other thing about this report, which I think is super interesting, is that it's interactive. So what kinds of information can people look at?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we really pride ourselves on trying to make data interactive at the Idaho Policy Institute. The dashboard is really broken into three major categories: households, that is characteristics of the households in a county; housing, characteristics of the kinds of housing and the housing stock in a county; and then values and prices, which both reflects home values and the incomes and the wages of the people in that county.
So with this current study, this current report that you've put out, does the data only go to 2020, or does it go up to 21 or 22?
We have worked on updating a lot of the data to 2021, and that's actively in the process of being updated. 2022 data is just starting to be released by the community, by the Census Bureau, and we're hoping to get that built in as quickly as possible.
And Vanessa, the reason why I asked that question is that when we look at the report, 2015 to 2020, income going up, housing going up more than 75%. I mean, we know also, though, that between 2020 and early like 22, housing costs exploded during the pandemic here. So I would assume that that will also play into the data that you collect.
Definitely. So, Gemma, when anyone's looking at the dashboard, they can really see that reflected when they're looking at the vacancy rates for either households that are renter households or households that are owner occupied. And so you'll see in that time frame that you're talking about, really since 2019, that the vacancy rate went down, which is not what we want to see. So the less percentage of vacancy, the harder it is for anyone to find a home. And that's the same for homeowners almost across the state, and certainly renters too.
Mm-hmm. So Vanessa, let's dig a little bit more into that, because I know that we talk a lot about housing prices, and they're finally settling down, but will probably never be back to where they were even 5, 6, 7 years ago. But can we dig into rental housing as well? Because when we all know that when you have skyrocketing housing prices, and even though income has gone up, when it can't keep up, people can't afford to purchase a home. So what did you find in regards then to the rental housing issue?
Well, definitely. I think, renters are in a really tricky spot, because since they're not occupying their home, they're kind of at the whim of the market, even more so than someone that's already in their home. So what we saw over the last couple of years is rents in certain cases were going up quite a bit. I spoke with some students here, and this wasn't part of the study, but spoke with some students here that were doing a research project at Boise State on this. And some of them said that their rental costs over the last year had gone up 20%, which forced them out of their home. And that's kind of what we were seeing with rents across the state, because there isn't any limitation on what an owner can charge as the way his rents go. So someone who owns can say to a renter, within the next year, your rent's going to go up 40%, and there's no limitation on that. That is something that an owner can do.
Mm-hmm. So how hard is it through your report, did you find, how hard is it for renters here in Idaho? I mean, is it, if you had to compare, let's say, purchasing a home versus being a renter, is everyone in the same boat?
Yeah, it's. I would say, especially since interest rates went up in the last year, it's really mm-hmm. been tricky for people who are trying to find a new housing option, whether they are owners or renters. So because of the lack of availability and because of the supply and demand issue that comes with that lack of availability, costs have gone up both for someone trying to attain a home purchase or to find a rental mm-hmm. home. And what we've seen in the annual statewide survey that Idaho Policy Institute does each year is that people across the state are reporting it'd be pretty difficult for them if they had to move out of their home for any reason to find another one at similar cost and mm-hmm. similar value, similar characteristics.
And Vanessa, is that across the board, no matter what income bracket you may fall into? Because, I mean, I follow the market just as a hobby, And I have to tell you, I mean, I look at these homes and I'm like, well, it would be ridiculous to sell your house, because to find a home that is similar to what you already have in a similar neighborhood, I mean, you're not going to, quote, you know, move up the ladder.
Right. Yeah, we are seeing it across income brackets, and we are seeing it across the state. In another study that IPI did last year, we talked with industry clusters in Twin Falls and over in Eastern Idaho, and we were talking with managers that were doing hiring. And they were saying, even when they were hiring at a very high level of employment, high payment level, mm-hmm. that they were having a hard time enticing people to come to Idaho Falls because they weren't even housing for them to show when they came to interview for the job. So even though they were making quite a bit of money, there wasn't any housing to kind of woo them with, right? It used to be that mm-hmm. Idaho Falls was very attractive because people could get paid well to work for the INL. And then they have all types of housing choices. And even in the higher income brackets, those choices aren't available anymore.
Well, and are we finding that even in the Treasure Valley to some extent? I mean, I know that we have a shortage when it comes to medical professionals, doctors in particular. And, you know, it used to be like, you know, come to the Treasure Valley, you can make all of this money and buy a house for so little. And, you know, and just anecdotally, I mean, I know that people have turned positions down because housing is so expensive, even when you're in those higher brackets.
Right. I mean, I've heard of hospital systems not being able to hire an orthopedic surgeon, and they certainly make a good income, but because they didn't feel like they were being compensated to what the type of housing they wanted to attain would be when they got here.
And before we take a break, Lance, can we go back to rentals? Because I know we mentioned this briefly, but the number of rentals available did fall over time. So there, that then, you know, impacts renters so very much. What did you find in regards to that?
Yeah, when talking about renters, it's helpful to take into account the fact that renters on general, not across the board, but in general, in most regions, tend to have a lower median income as well mm-hmm. than homeowners. And so when you talk about rental availability, it really helps to think about not only the number of rental units out there, which is very limited, but the number of rental units that might be affordable for a lower income bracket.
So I want to talk about a term in your report. It's called cost burdened. So basically, this means that people are paying too much of their budget for housing. So Vanessa, what did you find in your report? I mean, how much are we talking about?
Yeah, Gemma, that's a really good question. And when we think of someone, the housing affordability, that's when we start talking about cost burden. And what we want to see is that a household is paying less than 30% of their household income on housing costs. And that's not just mortgage or rent, but also includes utilities. And so what we saw across the state really surprised me. I honestly wasn't expecting to see this, but what we found was that 42% of renters were cost burdened, while nearly 26% of homeowners were cost burdened.
Wow. Okay. So if you are paying too much for housing, Vanessa, did your report show where people would then have to cut in their budget in order to remain housed?
Right. So what we end up seeing is that people have to make decisions about what they're going to buy for groceries that week. Can they put gas in their car? Can they pay for that prescription medication or not? And that's oftentimes a choice that a household has to make. You know, do they pay that mm-hmm. mortgage or that rent, or do they purchase those other things? Households that are cost burdened don't have that disposable income, right? So they're not necessarily making the decision about going on a vacation. It's really day-to-day living that they're trying to afford.
So you said 26% of homeowners, 42% of renters. So that's 68% of Idaho's population that are housed. I mean, we're not even talking about our unhoused population. So in your report, Lance, did you find how this really does impact, you know, families? I mean, Vanessa mentioned things like, what groceries do you buy? Do you buy the medication you might need? I mean, these are heavy burdens.
Right. We didn't dig into the kinds of non-housing expenses that a household might face and increasingly be challenged by as a result of rising costs. But we have found one interesting thing that we found is that, especially over the pandemic, Idaho experienced growth not only in urban counties, which has been the trend, but in rural counties. And rural counties that are already facing perhaps increased costs for access to groceries, transportation costs, could potentially be getting hit really hard by these housing cost increases.
So I know that in 2019, you found that more than 167,000 Idaho households were cost burdened. That is an extremely large number. So, Vanessa, what kinds of impacts does that have on the rest of the economy when so many Idahoans are cost burdened?
That's a really good question, Gemma. And definitely in our report, we mentioned that that could impact any economic development in the future. The people that are cost burdened aren't necessarily going out and spending income. That could be going to Target, right? Or just doing, shopping out in the community. So you're not seeing that kind of velocity of money that you'd like to see on local spending because a lot of that income is going to pay for those direct needs such as housing.
So, Vanessa, I know in the last segment we touched on some employers not being able to get employees in places like Eastern Idaho with the INL, medical professionals in the Treasure Valley. But with that said, I would assume that employers, other than these, high earning employers, are impacted when people are paying too much for housing. Did you look at that in your report?
Yeah, definitely. So one of the issues is that if someone's paying too much for housing, regardless of the area, they're less likely to have the income to commute to a job opportunity. So they're going to have to look for job opportunities that are closer to where they live, which maybe before they were able to pay for the car or pay for those commuting costs. So one of the things that we looked into that isn't covered specifically in the report was people that were commuting long distances, let's say from the Magic Valley, Twin Falls, up to Blaine County or the Sun Valley area. Did that get reduced as cost of living became higher and wages didn't get to be like much differentiation between being a wait staff up in Sun Valley or down in Twin Falls? And so things like that could happen. And then what we did see certainly in those resort towns is that there was the demand at restaurants to go out to dinner, but they didn't have the wait staff there, so we saw them choosing to be closed certain nights of the week.
Right. And then, I mean, just the housing costs in these resort areas, Vanessa. I mean, we talk about skyrocketing housing prices. I mean, when you're living in Twin and you're commuting to Blaine County to work because you can't even you can't afford to live any closer. I mean, it seems that these have just, domino effects, ripple effects.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, we see that in I mean, really in Boise and the Treasure Valley too, right? The affordability crisis is across the state, right? And it's in rural areas too. And so I think some of the questions we're asking are the people that are migrating out of the state, are they doing that because the cost of living has become so high here? There was a recent report that came out. It wasn't our report, but a media outlet down in Twin Falls pointed it out to me and said that there's a higher number of retirees leaving Idaho to retire than ever before. And I don't know if this is the case. I'm assuming it might be because they thought they might be able to retire here eventually, but with the cost of living going up so much, they've decided to actually retire in a lower cost community.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not surprised by that if that report is accurate. With that said, I'm curious about some of the takeaways that each of you had from the study. So Lance, I'll start with you. I mean, what were some of the takeaways that stood out to you?
I think the most interesting takeaway that I've encountered both in building this across the state about the study is for a long time, most of Idaho's growth was really concentrated in urban areas. But over the pandemic, almost every rural county in Idaho grew at a significant percentage. And that might be due to changing work trends over the pandemic or whatever else. But as a result, what we're seeing is folks across the state in rural areas are saying, hey, we're also seeing vacancy rates declining. We're also seeing housing crises on various scales. And this is really something that is worth paying attention to.
And what about you, Vanessa? What stood out to you about the study?
Well, so the study was, we kind of had thought that there might be housing crisis across the state, but we weren't really sure. And as we dug into the data more, it was really clear that it's not just an urban problem or resort problem, it's an Idaho problem. Mm. And that as a state, it's something that we need to look at addressing. And I was personally really pleased to see that the State House was able to support the use of that $50 million in ARPA funding to help support workforce housing. So that was the first time the state had done something like that. And I do believe it was after they had the opportunity to see that it's across the state, it's an issue.
So Vanessa, looking at the data from your report, I mean, how bad is the housing problem in Idaho?
Well, I think that's a good question. I think that I'm really excited to see this next round of data come in to see if with the kind of flattening of values, is that changing anything? I think there's a huge attention that's been called to housing. And I like to say, and I've been saying this for years, but I think it's happening. I like to say that in Idaho, this problem isn't so big that we can't wrap our arms around it. And I think we're really starting to see that. We're seeing the public sector, the private sector, and the nonprofit sector recognize it's an issue, and they're coming together to help solve the problem. And I think that's my optimistic outlook on it.
And Lance, I know you said that one of the takeaways for you was seeing how our more rural areas were impacted with growth and with the housing crisis. And I know that in your report, you broke everything down by county. So are there parts of the state that are doing better than others when it comes to affordable housing? Or is this across the board just a crisis?
That's a really good question, and I'm afraid I can't really speak too much to any particular county, but mm-hmm. I think it does help when looking at data like this to always be mindful of how the average compares to the individuals within the average. So, for example, in a county where housing burden is maybe going down, the folks that are still housing burden may be facing an increased burden, even as that percentage decreases. Likewise, in other areas, they may be winning and making advances in one direction, but it always pays to pay attention to the entirety of the story to make sure that the whole context is being taken into account and the variety of individual experiences are being worked into possible solutions.
So, Vanessa, before I let both of you go, where can people find the report and look at it for themselves?
So it's on Idaho Policy Institute's website, which you can find at boisesate.edu/sps-ipi/idaho-statewide-housing-analysis, which means I should get a shorter URL.
I was going to say, that's the longest URL.
So why don't I give it to you and you can put it on your website? How does that sound?
We will do that. That will be the perfect way to find it. Yeah, because I do think it would be so interesting to be able to look at it. I want to thank both of you so much for your time today and for breaking down the results of your report.
Thanks so much for having us, Gemma.
Thank you.
Absolutely. We've been talking with Vanessa Frye, the director of the Idaho Policy Institute at Boise State, along with research associate Lance McGinnis-Brown. They produce the Idaho Statewide Housing Analysis. And as I mentioned, we will put a link to their interactive study on our website. So all you have to do is go to boisestatepublicradio.org. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Race might be a hot topic right now, but for so many of us, talking about race is nothing new. On the Code Switch podcast from NPR, we go beyond the headlines and we go deep. Listen now.